Hey everyone, welcome back to the M&M Hockey Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Alex Metzger. Along with me is my co-host, Chase McCallum, and we got a lot to talk about today. The Stanley Cup playoffs are over. The season is done officially. There are no more games until September, October, I guess, probably officially for regular season games. It's been a long ride, but we are finally here, and the Vegas Golden Knights are the 2023 Stanley Cup champions. At the end of the day, a pretty wild playoffs, I would say, but an outcome that at any point over the last given year, I don't think would be that surprising, you know?
Yeah, it makes sense. It felt really anticlimactic by the time it happened.
Yeah, again, like I brought up a couple, I think it was last podcast about, you know, how the 2018 finals felt when like Washington just defeated Vegas, who was clearly just outmatched by the time they made it to the finals. Like that, yeah. This felt exactly like that.
Yeah, the end of the miracle run. Remind me a bit of way less extreme because Vegas isn't as good and Florida's not as bad, but like Tampa, Montreal too.
Yep, exactly. That's another really good one where, yeah, a lot of the time when there's a team that, quote unquote, you know, people think of a team that doesn't deserve to be there. Obviously, anyone who makes the finals deserves to be there. They won the games. Good for them.
Yeah.
But those miracle runs, as you said, like it just feels like by the time you get to the finals, it kind of the variance starts to correct itself out and you maybe get more of a disappointing series. And to be honest, like I'm trying to think of how many good and part of it, I think, is just teams are so, especially Florida, the one team always is so injured by the end. Like you hear Florida's injuries and stuff. It's just kind of hard, but I'm trying to think of like how many great Stanley Cup finals we've even had. Boston St. Louis was a really good one. Colorado Tampa wasn't bad last year, but even Colorado dominated a few of those games.
Yeah.
Like it was obvious who the better team was last year. And again, Tampa was so hurt by the end of it.
That one was more fun just because of like all the name value involved. Like the games actually were fairly underwhelming.
Yeah. Well, the first two were blowouts last year. Yeah. Like it was incredible. But yeah, definitely the name value is fair enough. But yeah, so I don't know. This series kind of went exactly how you felt the last two for the Panthers should go, but it finally came through. And again, you look at all the injuries, like Ekblad was playing like two separated shoulders. Matthew Tkachuk broke a sternum and tried to play another game. Like it was just absolutely insane what they were going through. I think Gudas is out. Lustarainen broke his tibia and is expected to miss part of training camp next year. Like just an absolute lineup of insane injuries. It's no shock that, you know, one team, and don't get me wrong, I'm sure Vegas has a ton of bruises and stuff like that, but it's no shock when one team has that much and they're already definitely the quote unquote underdog that you get a series like we did, which just, let's say what it was. It was not a very entertaining series this year.
No, I had to get up at like 5 for work. I didn't even watch the cup get handed out. That is literally the first time since I was like a child and wasn't allowed to stay up late enough to watch the cup handed out that I've not watched the cup get handed out.
Yeah, like I watched and I was on my phone for most like the third period, you know, like
yeah.
Once they scored in that game 5 and, you know, Florida got their game 3 or whatever. But as soon as Vegas won game 4, that was just, you knew it was over. So, I don't know. It's definitely, again, a little anticlimactic, as you said, but Vegas is definitely a deserving winner. It's not like, this is a case where we're looking back on it and going, wow, how the hell did they ever win a Stanley Cup or anything like that, right? So Jonathan Marchessault gets the MVP award for the playoffs, and fair enough. Like, again, we talked about last episode how he was the betting favorite, and, you know, I thought maybe Mark Stone's hat trick in the clinching game, which ended up being 9-3, by the way. That is just incredible how lopsided that game was. But I thought maybe Mark Stone's effort or Jack Eichel's would have been enough. But Marchessault, I don't have any issues with Marchessault getting the MVP award. Do you?
No, it made sense. It's like even strength, goal differential numbers were insane. Like he's obviously a really, really good player. It was fair.
While saying that, I don't know how to phrase this without sounding like an absolute dick. Is Jonathan Marchessault the worst player to win the Conn Smythe Trophy in like the last 2 decades?
Probably by a mile, right?
The only one I think is comparable is like Justin Williams, who like
Yeah.
let's be honest, people, and people might get mad at that too. Justin Williams is a great or a very, very solid player for a very long time. But he had, you know, it was quote unquote Mr. Game 7, which is a really cool nickname to have. It's
That's
one of
sick.
the coolest things, right? But like he won it in 2014, and it's like he's probably, if you look at regular season stats only, the closest equivalent to what Marchessault is and who won it.
Yeah. And even like I think Justin Williams is like top 50 in WAR over the analytics era at least.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not, and honestly, like, I'm not trying to call Marchessault a bad player either. And he had a phenomenal playoff run. It's just, it was funny because, yeah, like that will be a trivia thing, I think, when you look back on it, and especially looking at the teams that have Pietrangelo on their team, who was, you know, a stud when he won in 2019 as well. Have Mark Stone on it, Jack Eichel. And you go, who won the Conn Smythe for Vegas's first cup? And it's not the goalie, and it's not any of those three. It's Jonathan Marchessault.
Yeah, I feel like everyone will just assume it was Eichel in hindsight kind of thing.
Yeah, or like Mark Stone, the captain's
Stone.
Always a pretty safe bet, right?
Yeah.
But no, I mean, just an absolutely interesting thing for both these teams going forward now. I mean, Vegas is, let's be honest, Vegas is in a really good position to try and roll it back again next year. You know, they got some RFAs and UFAs at the end of their lineup. Brett Howden, he won't cost a ton, but Ivan Barbashev was a massive part of this, that top line, during this playoff run. He's a UFA who will definitely be getting paid, and I highly doubt it'll be by Vegas. Marchessault's got one more year left at $5 million. Same with Chandler Stephenson, William Carrier. So, you know, they're going to have some decisions to make definitely there. And then the biggest question is going to be, what do they do in net, where, you know, I kind of think I could see them letting Aiden Hill walk. You know, Logan Thompson's got $766K on his two more years on his deal. And then the biggest question is Robin Lehner healthy and ready to go? Because he's got two more years at $5 million. If he's an LTIR thing, I could see them looking to bring back one of Brossoit or Aiden Hill. If Leonard's healthy, you're probably just going to have to run Lehner and Thompson.
Yeah, which isn't the worst.
No, I think like that would be I mean, it's obviously hard to tell what Leonard's going to be after like a full year and a half off or whatever. But like, given everything we have about their priors, I think that would be the ideal two to go with.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, like there's a chance they get a significant upgrade in that, given the, like you said about Leonard's priors, like we could have an elite goalie next year.
Yeah,
after
and like.
This, all of this.
Yeah, which is just absolutely crazy thing. And that's literally all they have to do for re-signing. So it's not like, and granted, you know, they are, you know, obviously the whole thing about, we'll see where Mark Stone's health is and all that as well. But this is going to be a really good team again next year. No questions asked for sure. It's in 2 years that they're going to have a bunch of interesting questions and decisions to make. But I kind of wonder what Aiden Hill's next contract looks like as well. Like, I think, you know, he'll definitely get some money. It won't be like a Darcy Kemper kind of contract from this past year, but I could see some team giving him like 3 by 3, 3.5, or even a 1 year at $4 million to say, hey, let's go test this out or whatever. But I don't know. Like it's Aiden Hill's a weird one because I think everyone kind of naturally accepts he was a bit of a system goalie here, but also he did play phenomenal.
It was amazing.
There was like two chances in every game, even in the cup final, where it was like Florida was in alone. He's like, you are not scoring. I'm making a glove save here.
Yeah. And yeah, like that was the thing too for a lot of the system guys. Like when you kind of watch whoever it is, like I think maybe Crawford. Crawford was pretty good, but like you could tell Crawford benefited early on, at least greatly from the team he was on. Maybe Niemi's the better Hawks goalie example. Like, you could just kind of tell they didn't really look like they belonged. Hill looked amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, he didn't look out of place at all. And even, yeah, like, I feel like Niemi, there was, and I mean, this is going back 13 years now, but there was always a couple goals where it was like, ooh, yeah, like, an actual starter would have stopped that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Whereas, like, with Hill, I really can't remember too many of those during this playoff run at all.
No, I mean, that's a decent reason why they won the cup, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he had, I think, the highest save percentage of any goalie like in the modern era playing at least 15 playoff games. And granted,
yeah,
he was
he does.
Right on that cusp of, like, I think he played 15 games. But, like, still, that just shows you how insane of a 15-game run it was.
Yeah, absolute heater. Hopefully he can cash out on it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the career kind of guy who's floated around, hopefully he can find somewhere. So, and then on the other end, Florida, I mean, you know, like we said, it felt like it had to come to an end at some point, and it finally did. Again, injuries caught up with them quite a bit. I think there'll be the biggest question will be how hurt are they to get healthy again next year? I think they'll be right around the playoff mix again next year. You know, I don't think it'll be curious to see if there's some kind of mix of the President's Trophy, 127 point team that they were last year and the team that they were this year, you know, like, I don't think there's gotta be, right? Yeah. Like I don't think they're a team that deserves to miss playoffs or anything like that, but they're definitely the third most likely team in their own division, maybe fourth, depending on what Boston does, to make it to a cup final still, in my opinion. And they did it, and that's great. But, you know, they've got to change some stuff up if they want to repeat that, I think.
Yeah, 100%. Now, luckily, they put themselves in a good spot last summer with the Tkachuk trade. Like, I think they're pretty comfy. They're not that
Old. Like they're bringing back most of the same team as well. Eric Staal's a UFA, Colin White and Giovanni Smith are RFAs. So there's your entire fourth line basically that you have to overhaul slash healthy scratches. That's I'd say that's not the end of the world even a little bit.
Staal's were their worst players. So.
Yeah, I would say Mark Staal, Radko Gudas, Casey Fitzgerald, Lucas Carlson on the blue line are all UFAs. So like Radko Gudas is the only one, and even him, I think you could upgrade on him. I don't know, relatively easy, but easy enough. You could find a comparable to Radko Gudas anyways.
Yeah, it's easy to not downgrade on Gudas. He's like good enough in his role. I feel like a straight up upgrade might be hard, cheap, but.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I don't have too much to take away from that. I have gotten sick of listening already to people being like, look at how big both defensemen are. That's what you got to do. You got to get big guys. It's like you're taking the wrong thing out of this. If all you look at is the dude's height and go, that's great.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know why it's controversial. Like, just get good players. That's how you get good players and give them a whole bunch of shots at a cup. It's so stupid.
And that's the thing. Like, if you're going to take, if you're going to take something out of this Vegas thing, it's like they were absolutely made fun of for, well, not, maybe not, but like people. Legitimately, people were asking, can you win with Jack Eichel?
Yep.
Can you win by – and, like, going and making fun of them getting Stone and then Pietrangelo and Pacioretty and then Eichel. Like, everyone was – one of the things I think they – I heard on Overdrive was that when the GM, like, the Vegas front office was doing their press conference is that they took issue with people saying that they were always going to get the shiny new toy. It's like, no, we were going to get good players. And that is the objective truth of it all. Yeah. Like – they knew their cup final team from year one wasn't sustainable, so they went out and got Pacioretty, who was a top-line winger. They went out and got Mark Stone, who was a top-five winger in the league. When a legit number one defenseman came around to help their other number one in Shea Theodore, they went and got Alex Pietrangelo. And then what everyone said was they lacked that scoring touch and that true number one center to filter everything through. So what they do, they went and got a 24-year-old all-star number one center for dirt cheap, you know? Like... they gave up a first, a second, and Alex Tuch.
They did the thing that every team pretty much in their spot fails to do after like a fraudulent run, is they took an honest look in the mirror and got better instead of being like, nah, this was real.
Yeah, and like...
that's not just a hockey thing either. You see it all the time in football, and I'm sure it happens in every sport.
Back-to-back winnings, or, you know, they missed the playoff by 1 point in one of the most injury-riddled seasons they've had. See ya, Pete DeBoer, you're out.
Yep,
bring in Bruce Cassidy.
After that, yeah,
you know, like, and you know, and Bruce Cassidy did a phenomenal job too, and I'm very happy too because, you know, I think there was, I thought he got unfairly treated this year because of how insane Boston's season went, where people went, see, Cassidy wasn't actually that good. It's like, no, Cassidy is a top like three coach in the NHL.
Yeah, Cassidy was definitely not an issue. I'm also happy that Vegas did win because I really didn't want to hear like, oh, you can't win by it because they were too ruthless or whatever.
It's just the stupidest. Everything. Exactly. It's the stupidest thing in the world. So,
how many former players are like, oh, I would never play for Bill Belichick again? Like, people constantly do, right? You'd be an asshole if you win. That's the unfortunate reality.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is not like Vegas is like telling them to go off into the street with their family and no homes or something like that. It's like they're just upgrading on players and sending them to a different city. Like, they're still getting paid their millions of dollars.
Alex Petrangelo is available. Like, wow. What crazy that they would do such a thing.
Same with, sorry, Fleury, a goalie who's 9 years younger and better than you is available. We got to let you go.
Yeah, like they treat it like it's a meritocracy, which you should.
Yeah, like I don't know. I'm happy Vegas won as well. So, I don't have much more to say on that. The ratings were very low this year in the U.S. Again, I can't say I'm shocked just with the two markets and saw people blaming the marketing of the NHL. That's not untrue, but also like if you're going to tell me South Florida and Vegas are in a cup final, I'm going to tell you the ratings probably aren't going to be that great, especially with how deep into June we went. And we've talked about this a lot, but there's no reason to be handing out the Stanley Cup in the middle of June. Like you said it yourself, you didn't watch the game and rightfully so, like you had something better to do because it's the middle of June and people can actually go out now.
Exactly. It's just it's just burnout eventually, right?
Yep. Like they need to wrap this up by the end of May at the very latest. Even like I think wrapping up by the end of April would be ideal. Get the season started in early September, wrap up by end of April.
Yeah. Like give your draft some time to breathe too.
What's the thing? It's like we're already a week and a half away from drafts and stuff like that.
Yep.
Like you and I are going to like, we basically have to do two podcasts a week again, just because there's going to be so much content coming up over the next 2 weeks here.
Yeah. There's so much stuff now.
So yeah, I don't know. That's, and we do have a ton of news, so we'll keep going on that as well. Did you have any other, you know, thoughts or comments on the finals here?
Not really. Like speaking of the burnout thing, like that's just the least attention I've paid to a final in a while. It's just, I mean, good for Vegas, but
yeah, like my schedule didn't work really well with Vegas, with the games that just lined up. So I only got to watch one or two of the games as well. But yeah, like I just, especially after Vegas took the 2-0 lead, I just kind of felt like there was no way Florida was coming back.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just a better team was in control the entire time.
Yeah. And that, you know, culminated in a just 9-3 shit kicking in the final game.
I didn't even realize it was that aggressive until I woke up the next morning. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, they just kept pouring it on. There was one empty netter in there. They made an empty netter to make it 8-3 and then scored a goal with the goalie back in the net. It's like, hilarious. Yeah. So, all right. Well, before we move on to some news, we'd like to give a shout out to our sponsors at Athletic Greens. Their signature AG1 is perfect for daily nutrients and gut health support. AG1 solves two of the most important health needs, the nutrients your body needs each day and the foundation of long-term gut health. Together, they fuel whole body health, impacting everything from sleep, digestion, energy, mood, immunity, to the health of your hair, skin, and nails. Simply follow the link in our show description and get started today. All right, we have some really big news pieces, to be completely honest, since the last time we recorded, Chase. Let's start with what I'm going to selfishly call the biggest one, and that is the sale of an entire franchise in the Ottawa Senators. And it's big news for anyone, but
why was Ottawa's ownership involved?
I was going to say it's always big when Ottawa's ownership comes to the forefront, and I'm hoping that is less of a topic going forward. Michael Andlauer buys the 90% of the Ottawa Senators, not a whole 100%. The Melnick estate will be keeping 10% as an investment, but won't have any decisions in hockey operations from the sound of it. But Andlauer, yeah, absolutely. Like it's a very smart play too, especially because they get $950 million for the other 90%. So a very pretty penny, and they still get to keep it as just an investment that's just going to keep rolling in, you know? So,
basically can't lose money on it.
Literally, like this is great. I mean, the best possible outcome for the Melnick estate. I'm happy this process is over. I'm going to do maybe a bit longer of an episode, or I'm going to do a bit more of a breakdown on my other podcast, Last Word on Sens podcast, at some point over the next week. But to be truthful, I'm just, as a Sens fan, I'm excited. I'm happy the process is over. It doesn't sound like the sale's actually going to go through just for a little bit because Anwar actually owns part of the Montreal Canadiens. So he's got to sell that first before he can officially buy the Senators. So that'll still maybe throw some wrench in some in the things in terms of how they do drafts. And honestly, it sounds like the ownership was kind of what DeBrincat has been held up on at times as well. So we'll see how that all plays out. But yeah, here's to hoping. I really hope that there's an owner that, you know, isn't too involved in the day-to-day decision-making like Melnick was throughout the years and just, you know, wants to build a good team and spends on building a good team.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have an owner in Ottawa who, like, casual fans don't know his name.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, yeah, and I am excited. You know, he owned the team in Hamilton for a while. Like, he owned the AHL team, and then he brought the OHL team to Hamilton as well.
Oh, really?
Yep, and in Hamilton, you know, he had already had a quote about, like, how their OHL team in Hamilton was more analytically thinking, so I'd be very happy to see that if that's something they look to expand the front office towards as well.
That would be big for Ottawa, because I mean, I'm sure they have people there, but I don't think they're ahead of the curve in that regard.
No, they are definitely not. They are very behind the curve, if anything. Yeah. They have a few, like, people is very limited to what it is. Yeah.
It sucks when, like, stuff like that happens, because I'm sure the individuals there are great, but it's just, like, the smartest person on earth can't do it things well if they're just completely overwhelmed, right?
Yeah, well, and half of it, too, is, like, even if they do suggest stuff, it's like, if you only have two people in your analytics department, how likely is it that the GM is going to listen to that?
Yeah, there's clearly just not a lot of weight to the input there, else you would put a massive investment in.
Yeah, like, just, yeah. So the other interesting thing about NLR that I'm going to be curious to see is if he has to sell the Hamilton Bulldogs. Like, I can't imagine question. You're allowed owning an OHL team and an NHL team, right?
I don't know. Probably not.
That would seem like a pretty big conflict of interest.
Because on the one hand, they don't compete directly against each other.
You do draft directly from the league.
Yeah, they're very indirectly related.
Yeah, I would be shocked if he's allowed to keep. But I don't know.
Unless it's like a thing, like, you know how Trump has to sign over Biden? Like, there was a big thing with Trump had to sign over the company to his kids or whatever.
Yeah, maybe something like that.
Something along those lines could be.
Yeah, it's possible for sure. But yeah, no, I'm just excited. I hope that, you know, it's just, again, he comes in and he's, again, been in hockey a long time, both OHL, AHL, NHL. So that's, you know, super encouraging. I just hope he comes in and wants to actually spend money on the team. That'll be a welcome change.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Just don't be publicly an asshole and spend money on the team. Not a difficult thing to walk into for him.
The bar is incredibly low.
Yeah.
Like, impressively low, to be completely honest.
Yeah. As lowest. Yeah.
I thought I saw something else about the Tampa Bay Lightning being sold, but now I can't find it.
Oh, yeah, it hasn't happened, but it's, like, going to, or, like, in the process.
Yeah, and so, because the other thing I want to bring up was this Senator sale now sets a record for highest sale ever for an NHL franchise, which, the Tampa Bay Lightning are selling a minority interest to Arctos Sports Partners at a valuation of $1.4 billion.
Jeez. So, I mean, it makes sense given the way Tampa's been the past few years.
Yeah, so I don't know what that means they'll actually get paid or what percentage, but it would mean that the valuation of their entire team would be $1.4 billion for all 100%. So that'll be something to keep an eye on as well.
It's insane.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, I don't know. I just feel – I don't feel bad for any of the owners when they complain about, like, Oh, well, we're not making money, so the salary cap can't go up. It's like, you are making money, you lying, you know, like, you know
They're making
what.
tons of money.
Exactly. And like, even, you know, there was obviously the Bell cut layoffs this week, which just absolutely sucks to see, you know. Goes without saying, hearts go out to anyone affected that in the business, and hopefully they can all recover on their feet. But it's like, it's so infuriating, you know, that people go, oh, well, radio's clearly dying because that's why they keep making cuts. It's like, that's not how that works. People just want to get as much money as they possibly can, so they do things as cheap as they possibly can.
Yeah, people are not in it as really nice people.
No, not at all. So, yeah, let's get to some player news then. And the New Jersey Devils have made a pair of transactions this week, and the first of which was a sign and trade. The first like big sign and trade I think we've had in a long time, if I'm not mistaken.
There
And
was
they,
one at some point, but.
yeah, they're definitely. I know this is the second one I think in NHL history. I just cannot remember.
God, I saw it
Oh,
on Twitter. It was like
I'm
really
so.
recent and
Yeah,
huge.
it's the Matthew Tkachuk one.
Yes, that was it. Yes.
Okay, so yeah, so this is the second one, and Tkachuk was like the first one I think we had seen, honestly, and then this is the second one. Damian Severson signs an 8-year deal with technically with New Jersey, but then is immediately flipped to the Columbus Blue Jackets. Columbus, again, we talked about them last week, going after Provorov. They also then go out and get Damian Severson 8 years at a cap hit of $6.25 million, so a $50 million deal in total. Damian Severson is 28 right now and will be 29 when the season starts. His birthday's in August, so signing him for his years, 20 to 36. This probably won't be a shock to know how I feel about this contract, and it's not great.
Yeah, there's been like a little bit of debate because his numbers were really good last year, but I mean, did he just randomly happen to get amazing on ice numbers when the team got really, really good, or was he a bit of a passenger? Like, I'm sure he's a fine player. I'm sure he's a number three defenseman or whatever, but that's an ugly deal.
Yeah, like I think it's fine value right now, but yeah, it's again, he's 29 years old. I'm willing to bet within 3 years this contract, he's probably not worth $6.25 million.
Yeah,
And
it's not gonna take Florida.
that's exactly when Columbus is gonna, it's the same thing with Provorov last week, except it's more money for an older guy who,
He's
again, is about,
better at least,
yeah,
but
like I
no.
guess, but like, yeah, I don't, Damian Severson's biggest thing too is just like, he underperform his actual goals always underperform his expected goals.
At like historic rates.
It's just like, I don't know, maybe that's something that Columbus can use because they do have Patrick Laine and Johnny Gaudreau, like a goal scorer kind of guys, right? But like, I don't know, I just feel like this Columbus team could use more puck moving, goal scoring kind of guys. Just Severson will probably help in that aspect, but it's just a lot of money for a guy who's 29. And again, like, what are the odds that Columbus makes playoffs? This trade and the Provorov trade, they're probably only boost them at max, what, like 7%?
Yeah, if that, I don't know what like the markets had them at before or after, but I can't imagine it's good even like right now.
No, like I just, yeah, I
It
don't know.
seems like ownership was just like, hey, start competing. I'm tired of being bad.
Well, and it makes sense too, because they probably, ownership's probably like, okay, why did we just go sign Patrick Laine and Johnny Gaudreau to combine like $17 million if their plan's to rebuild for the next 3 years?
That's exactly what this sounded like, because it just seems so incoherent with so much of what, like they've done a pretty good job. They've done some smart stuff drafting and whatnot, and then don't know, it just seems like they blew up the potential for what they had worked a long time to build in like a week for no real reason.
Yeah, they've always kind of been like that, though. They've been a team that's just been happy to be eighth in the East and get their couple home playoff dates, you know, like, and
Yeah, that's fair. And I mean, if that's what ownership wants, then you're
and
Mo Kekalainen. There's only 32 jobs in the world. You got to do it.
And I have no idea if that's an ownership play or just the way they, because I was just kind of assumed it was the way they built, you know, like we always talk about the, you know, the tax for teams that, you know, aren't as big of hockey markets. And I would say Columbus definitely fits into that, especially because it's not like they're a warm climate either. So I was just kind of thought that would be the reason. But again, they go get Gaudreau and at a, you know, decent price point for what we thought. Like, I remember when the Gaudreau signing happened, people thought it was going to be for like $12 million if he went to Columbus. But it wasn't. But like, I just kind of assumed that they were always just an okay team because they knew they were never going to get them stars. But, you know, they had a good enough core that they wanted to just always be in the mix and see what happened. But like, now they're just purposely doing that. I just don't really get it.
Yeah, I don't get it at all. Like, I get wanting to have some level of competency, especially because whoever they – like, they've done a really good job drafting. But whoever they pick this year will be the most important player since Artemi Panarin, at least probably since Rick Nash, like, for the franchise. Like, Leo Carlson, presumably, they take becomes the – second most important player in franchise history almost immediately, I would wager, given that he has this profile of a first overall pick, and they've only ever had one other one with Rick Nash. But, like, they weren't horrible before. Like, they had a bad year, but they were injured to hell. Like, it's not like they didn't have pieces to insulate them already. You didn't really need to do any of this. They weren't going to, like, it wasn't going to ruin him the way the team was already.
No, absolutely not. And, like, Like the thing is, these moves don't help Leo Carlson. Or like, because like adding,
really. Adding,
well, that's the thing. It's not like they went in and overspent on, like, I don't know, Ryan Strome, like Anaheim did last year, whatever, and gave Ryan Strome 3 years and like $1 million too much to make sure that Leo Carlson doesn't have to be their 1C next year.
Yeah.
Like, adding Damian Severson doesn't really shelter him in any. Sure, it helps that you're getting a puck mover, or like the, like Severson's more, but like Provorov's not really a puck mover. I just, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's, again, I get, like, I think this team will be fine next year because they have so much young talent that it's like, that's great, but so much that young talent is going to need to get paid when these guys' deals are starting to look bad, and you're like, why the hell are we paying 20 or 32 year old Severson and maybe just re-signing a 27 year old Provorov for a combined $18 million when we need to sign Kent Johnson and you know, and that's probably when Leo Carlson will be coming up in 3 years. Obviously, like, that's a long 3 years away, but this contract spans the entire deal.
Yep. Oh yeah, easily. Like, I don't know. It just like, doesn't make any sense.
They give an asset to go do it to, and I get, like, you want to make sure you get your guy or whatever, but was someone else going to offer Damon Severson $50 million? I mean, maybe, I guess it was probably the eighth year that allowed them to get it, but I don't know. I don't really understand it on any length.
No, and, like, one of the great benefits of being a good draft team is you have David Giercek. Like, you have the most valuable, or second, depending on what you think of Nemec, defensive prospect in the league. Yeah. Like, you don't need to sell your soul for Severson right now.
No. And again, it's just the same thing with Provorov.
Yeah, you have Werenski is a top pair guy, and you should think you have another Giercek. You've got bigger problems if Giercek sucks anyways. So, like, yeah, I don't know.
And at least Provorov was 2 years. Like, it's just the 8 years that I just can't get. It's like, this contract's not going to be good.
No. It's like, there's a chance it's not even good next year, which is really bad to start on a UFA contract that's 8 years long when he's 29.
Yeah, like, I'm expecting this to be fair value next year. And by fair value, I'm going by, like, Dom's player cards of, like, I think he had him at six exactly. If you go by Evolving Hockeys, they have him as, like, a $2 million player. So,
I believe it.
And I think it was like closer to literally like bare league minimum for the past couple of years, just because of how poorly his actual goals have been compared to his expected ones.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? Because the GAR model is going to kill him then, because the puck's never going in the net. And usually you wave that away to just noise, especially for a defender. Because, but when it's happened at historic rates for what's it been, like 8 years now? Yeah, there's probably just something there.
Yeah, exactly. So, for New Jersey, absolutely amazing job to work the phone and find a team that really wanted him. So you get a third round pick out of a dude you were losing a free agency anyways.
That's pretty sweet.
And then they take his cap space and go sign Jesper Bratt to an absolutely phenomenal deal.
That was crazy. I mean, he's the exact kind of player that was going to get underpaid, but that's an insane deal.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why they didn't just sign this last summer. Like, by all, if I remember correctly, and maybe I'm wrong, if I am, someone can definitely correct me, but like, I'm pretty sure this is just kind of the contract Brat won last year, and New Jersey wasn't really sure if they wanted to give it to him.
Yeah, I guess they got an extra year, so they have more certainty now, but like, I don't
know.
It seemed unnecessary to drag it out to that.
Yeah. I mean, like, again, good for them. Like, it didn't end up burning them, and they still get just an extremely good value deal. Like, yes, for Brat, I think it's one of the more, I'd say he definitely files underrated. I think maybe in the stats community, he's probably not as underrated, but like, even for a guy who had 73 points in 82 games last year, that doesn't jump off the page to you. And that was probably a more disappointing season for him last year, especially compared to what he produces as, you know, underlying value as well.
Yeah, because all of his fantasy stats are insane. He's a big reason why New Jersey was so good this year. Like, he's better. Like, I don't know. If you ask a lot of people, I don't even think they'd consider him better than, like, Patrick Kane or guys like that. But he is significantly better than those guys. He's like in the Nylander tier of player.
Yeah. I'm just seeing more New Jersey news come here. They're going to take Timo Meier to arbitration.
Interesting. So that's a 1 or 2 year deal then, at most, yeah. Right?
In both cases, and sorry, I guess I should say the reason Friedman tweeted this out, Ottawa announced that they're going to take DeBrincat to arbitration. Probably the same with both teams here. The reason Ottawa's doing it is because DeBrincat's qualifying offer is $9 million. Ottawa taking him to arbitration now has the option to get it down as low as like 7.2. So everyone kind of believes that there's a chance they may not actually want to go to arbitration. They might just say, hey, DeBrincat, like, take $8 million for 1 year now and we'll figure this out. So I'm guessing that's the same with Timo Meier here, because he has that massive qualifying offer he worked in with San Jose. Like, his qualifying offer, I think, is like $11 million.
$10 million.
Yeah, his base salary was $10 million last year. So 1 year arbitration award in this case can be 85% of last year's salary. So, you know, the Devils can at least make a case if they're not going to get him long term, that they can get him at 8.5 instead of 10 for a year. I think they'll still probably get a long term deal done at some point. But
I would be kind of shocked if they made that trade without the plan for that.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, and to be fair, I said the same thing about Ottawa and DeBrincat, but, you know, I'm sure they plan to have the re-sign, and the player has a choice in it as well. But, and they're similar situations, but you think with Timo Meier, the Devils actually making the second round last year and already being good would persuade him a little more to want to sign on.
Yeah. And the Devils are probably the best setup team for the future in the league at this point.
Oh, yeah. Like, they got to be top three, top five of teams you want. Top three, probably, of teams you'd want to take over right now.
Yeah, I'm struggling to think of anyone above them.
Yeah, it's maybe depends how highly you rate Bedard.
Yeah, I was going to say, you could just go clean slate, bunch of picks in Colorado, Bedard.
Yeah. If you're I would say Anaheim's another one. If you're completely ignoring market factors, Arizona is probably still a really good team just with all the freaking draft picks that they have.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only long-term contracts they have are Clayton Keller and Larson Krause, which you could probably find positive value on both of those if you really wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
And then they have, yeah, and then a billion picks over the next first three rounds for 3 years.
Yeah, New Jersey's got all those, like, elite prospects and they're good now. So, like,
yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think they'll get a good deal done. But, yeah, with Brat, just really solid week of business for New Jersey. And they have a ton of work yet to do because they have five more RFAs, Timo Meier being one of them, three UFAs, Eric Holla, Thomas Tatar, Miles Wood, that they need to decide up front. And then Ryan Graves, it sounds like they're going to be moving on from him, which makes sense given the depth that they have on the blue line as well. So it'll be a bit of a new-look team definitely on the blue line next year. Dougie Hamilton, John Marino, Jonas Siegenthaler, Brendan Smith is still there, and then it'll be Luke Hughes, and one would have to think that Simon Nemec will be pushing his way onto that blue line sooner rather than later.
I would think so. Wouldn't I be shocked if it takes him more than the end of next year?
Yeah, I think just the way they're setting up the team, all things right, it'll probably be next year. And then Kevin Ball, they'll definitely re-sign. 22-year-old left-hand defenseman, big guy. They really seem to like him. So I bet you him and Brendan Smith probably rotate as like the 7th D. Smith is probably 7th D. And then,
Is fine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, excited to see where they go, especially Annette. Again, it kind of feels like they might just go with Schmidt and Vanacek. I wouldn't hate it, but also, like, I wouldn't blame them if they wanted to try and do something else. I don't know how you're moving on Vanacek right now, I guess. There might be some team that would trade for him, but I don't know.
Yeah, if you're willing to literally give him away, I'm sure you could.
Yeah, but I don't feel like they will be because they did just give him 3 years at $3.4 million. And it's not like he was bad last year. He sucked once he got to the playoffs, but he was good in the regular season.
That's the thing. There was 50 fine games after 80 fine games in Washington. Like, he just seems like he's an average-ish goalie, and then you just have a bet that your skaters can all get hot at the right time.
Yeah.
Go for the Colorado Cup model, which, yeah, seems like they have the horses to do it.
And I bet you they're hoping that Schmid turns into the guy who can overtake Vanacek anyways.
Yeah, that's true, too.
So, and then the last piece of news I had here, did you have anything else on New Jersey? I guess I should say quick.
No, I don't think so.
Last piece of news I had here is then that New York Rangers have hired a head coach, and it is Peter Laviolette. Can you say uninspiring? That is what I think
it's
of
most,
when
like,
I
mid thing like in the world.
Yeah, I just like I don't really like. I don't know. I guess. Given the opposite, the rumor was it was between him and John Hines, and I'll take this over John Hines for the Rangers. But, like, it's just such a Rangers hire where it's like, just shoot for something a little more optimistic than this.
Yeah. Yeah, like, he's, yeah, uninspiring is perfect.
The just argument, just a forgettable coach, right? Like,
yeah, he's had some success. Was he the... He's got his cup in Carolina, did all right in Philly, Nashville, and Washington.
Yeah, like, it's just, I don't know, I guess the one thing I've seen defended about it is, like, he's known to get the most out of teams right away and then has a big shelf, or has a quick shelf life, but for this team it won't matter because, like, their core is right now anyways, so, which I kind of understand, but I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, if that's what they're going for, I'd rather have 3 good years than anything.
Yeah, I just don't know if he's going to give you 3 good years anyways.
Well, that's the thing. He'll probably give you 3 fine years.
Yeah. Which, okay, if that's what we're shooting for, then fine. But
yeah.
The one thing I do like about this will now make it 5 of the 8 Metro teams that he has coached in his career.
Really?
Yeah,
I guess Carolina, Washington.
Yep.
New York.
Can you name the other two?
Did he do the Islanders?
He was the Islanders in 01, 02, and 02, 03.
Okay.
Big one here. He coached for the other, for another team for like 5 years.
I took him to a finals. Took him to a finals in the Metro. That's got to be Philly then, right?
Yeah.
It is Pittsburgh. That's the only other finals team.
The Devils would have technically been an option as well in 2012. But.
Oh, yeah, but I knew. What's his name? DeBoer there.
Yeah. But, yeah, he went to – his first year with Philly was the year they went to the finals. But – and he took over halfway through, I believe. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have much to say on that other than just, like, it kind of fits what this whole Rangers team feels like, where it's like they go get the biggest name possible and it's people ooh and ah, but it's probably not the actual smartest thing in the world. I don't know. Like, it's tough to say because with coaching, I don't know what makes a good coach. It's just, it is hilarious to see that the same, like, 40 dudes get rotated in and out for 32 spots, and then you'll get, like, the odd time where a rebuilding team will be like, here, you can get this shitter team and try and do something with it.
Yeah, and there's probably more of an incentive to just, like, not screw up when you're New York, but I don't know. It seems like you should dream bigger.
Yeah, 100%. So, Chase, you have anything else for the week?
I do not believe so.
I don't either, so we'll make it quick. It sounds like someone is absolutely playing a concert with some bands in their background right now. Yeah.
Trying to counter that as I go, but it's been difficult.
It's all good. We will be back with everyone next week. I think, you know, I mentioned our schedule will probably just depend on how much news there is every week. As we get closer to free agency and the draft, we'll definitely probably do two a week for a couple more weeks, but it'll just depend if there's some signings and stuff between now and Sunday. But if not, we'll be back at you next Thursday as well. So thank you everyone so much for listening. As always, you can find me on Twitter at NHL Sends and Stuff, Chase on Twitter at CMHockey66, all his work on his Substack. And you can find all my work at lastwordonhockey.com. Thank you everyone so much for listening. Talk to you all next week.